Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 13, Indra Afflicted by Sinful Reactions, Text Number 4. Shri Shukuvacha Ritra Vikrama Sam Vigna Sarve Deva Saharishibi. Tadvida yarta yanindram naichad bita brihad vadat Shri Shukuvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, Ritra of Ritrasura, Vikrama, by the powerful activities, Samvigna, being full of anxieties, Sarve, all, Deva, the demigods, Saharishibi, with the great sages, Tat Vadaya, for the killing of him, Artayan, requested, Indra, Na, Achet, declined, Bita, being afraid, Brihat Vadat, due to killing a Brahmana. Shri Shukadeva Goswami answered, when all the great sages and demigods were disturbed by the extraordinary power of Vritrasura, they had assembled to ask Indra to kill him. Indra, however, being afraid of killing a Brahmana, declined their request. King Indra replied, when I killed Vishwarup, I received extensive sinful reactions, but I was favored by the women, land, trees, and water, and therefore I was able to divide the sin among them. But now if I kill Vritrasura, another Brahmin, how shall I free myself from sinful reactions? Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, hearing this, the great sages replied to King Indra, O King of Heaven, all good fortune unto you. Do not fear. We shall perform an Ashvamedha sacrifice to release you from any sin you may accrue by killing the Brahmana. The rishis continued, O King Indra, by performing an Ashvamedha sacrifice and thereby pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul, Lord Narayan, the Supreme Controller, one can be relieved even of the sinful reaction for killing the entire world, not to speak of killing a demon like Vritrasura. 8-9. One who has killed a Brahmana, who has killed a cow, or one who has killed his father, mother, or spiritual master, can immediately be freed from all sinful reactions simply by chanting the holy name of Narayan. Good luck. It doesn't seem like the sages have read the Bhagavatam. Other sinful persons, such as dog eaters and chandalas, who are less than shudras, can be freed in this way. But you are a devotee, and we shall help you by performing a great horse sacrifice. If you please Lord Narayan in that way, why should you be afraid? You will be freed even if you kill the entire universe, including the Brahmanas, not to speak of killing a disturbing demon like Vritrasura. Purport. It is said in the Brihad Vishnu Purana, Namno hi yavati sakti papa nirharane hare tadvat kartum na saknoti patakam Pataki Narha. Also in the Prema Vivarta by Jagannanda Pandit, it is said, Eka Krishna Nami Patra Yata Papa Shaya Bahu Janme Sei Papi Karite Naraya. This means that by once chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can be freed from the reactions of more sins than he can even imagine performing. The holy name is so spiritually potent that simply by chanting the holy name, one can be freed from the reactions to all sinful reactions, activities. What then is to be said of those who chant the holy name regularly or worship the deity regularly? For such purified devotees, freedom from sinful reaction is certainly assured. This does not mean, however, that one should intentionally commit sinful acts and think himself freed from the reactions because he is chanting the holy name. Such a mentality is most abominable offense at the lotus feet of the holy name. Namno balad yasya hi papa buddhi. The Lord's holy name certainly has the potency to neutralize all sinful activities. But if one repeatedly and intentionally commits sins while chanting the holy name, he is most condemned. These verses name or the performers of various sinful deeds. In the Manu Samhita, the following names are given. A son begotten by a brahmana and born from the womb of a shudra mother is called a parishava or nishada. A hunter accustomed to stealing. Luckily, there are no Brahmins in this age. So. A son begotten by a nishada in the womb of a shudra woman is called a pakasha. A child begotten by a kshatriya in the womb of the daughter of a shudra is called a ugra. A child begotten by a shudra in the womb of the daughter of a kshatriya is called a shata. A child begotten by a kshatriya in the womb of a lower class woman is called a shvada or dargita. All such offerings are considered extremely sinful, but the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so strong that all of them can be purified simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. The Hare Krishna movement offers everyone a chance to be purified, regardless of birth or family, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18. Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pukasha Abirya Shumba Yavana Kashadayaha Yanye Chapapa Yedapa Shraya Shraya Chudyanti Tasmai Pravishnave Namaha. Kiratas, Hundas, Andras, Pulindas, Pukashas, Abiras, Shumbas, Yavanas, members of the Kasha race, and even others addicted to sinful acts, can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, for he is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Even such sinful persons can certainly all be purified if they chant the holy name of the Lord under the direction of a pure devotee. Herein, the sages encourage King Indra to kill Vritrasura even at the risk of Brahmahatya, the killing of a brahmana, and they guarantee to release him from all sinful reactions by performing an Ashvamedha Yajna. Such purposely devised atonement, however, cannot relieve the performer of sinful acts. This will be seen from the following verse. Well, as we can see by the title of the chapter, Indra afflicted by sinful reactions, that the assurance of the sages didn't mean very much. As a matter of fact, the beginning of this canto, Pariksha Maharaj is inquiring from Shukadeva Goswami about prayaschita. is it possible that if you commit sinful activities by performing prayaschitta, then you can actually get free from the reactions of the sinful activities? And Shukadeva Goswami doesn't agree with that any more than if you have a pot, a wine pot, if you take that, you can clean it very easily. So performance of pious activities does not counteract sinful activities. Performance of prayaschitta doesn't counteract the sinful activities that one is performing. Or at least, even if it does counteract the sinful activities, it doesn't counteract the desire for sinful activities. Prabhupada gives the example, if one is addicted to illicit sex and acquires venereal disease, then even if one is cured of the venereal disease, because this desire for sinful, for illicit sex is there, then again one will repeat the same activity, illicit sex, and acquire the same disease again. So what's the point of prayaschitta if the desire for sinful activities is not removed? One will wind up committing the same sinful activity again and again and again and again, find himself in the same position. Therefore, it's not here, we're in the sixth canto, it's not by accident that we're hearing about Indra. He's at least a two-time loser in this particular canto. He killed Vishwarup, because Vishwarup was a double agent, an agent for the demigods and an agent for the demons. And when he was discovered, Indra cut off his three heads. But Vishwarup was a Brahmin, not just a two-pais sacred thread Brahmin. He's a real Brahmin, situated in the mode of goodness. Otherwise, the demigods wouldn't have taken shelter of Vishwarup if he was just an ordinary person. But to cut off the head of the person you take shelter of is not exactly the best alternative that you could possibly have. And indeed, Indra encountered great difficulties in his existence after doing so. He solved one problem and wound up with many more problems. Similarly, Vritrasura appears to be a problem, and Indra, by this time, has learned something of a lesson that it's not a good idea to kill Brahmins, in case you were planning like that. This is a good canto to read. That it's a, one may get away with it, seemingly, because the law doesn't catch up with one. But that's even worse than even if the law did catch up with one. As it said that if the government executes a murderer, it's for the murderer's benefit, because that way he doesn't have to take a lower birth necessarily. Of course, this is a general statement. If the murderer doesn't rectify his mentality, then even being executed doesn't really help one very much. In other words, the element of consciousness is always there. When we hear about the glories of chanting the holy name, we also have to take into account the element of consciousness. It is not that one can imagine that one is chanting the holy name and mechanically chant some words that appear to oneself to be like the holy name, but are actually not Krishna, nor Srimati Radharani, nor the internal energy of Krishna. The holy name, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, is not simply a combination of the letters of the alphabet. The holy name is actually Krishna himself. In order to be able to chant Hare Krishna, and actually chant Hare Krishna, one has to be in the same level of spiritual consciousness as Krishna and his associates. If one wants to enter into fire, then one has become like fire. If one wants to live in the water, one has to become like the water. So to actually chant the holy name and actually associate with Krishna, one has to become like Krishna. Krishna may be there when we're chanting the holy name, but then Krishna is already everywhere. He's already in every atom. He's in our heart, but we're not aware of it. Naham prakasha sarvasha yogamaya samarita mudayam na vijananti lokayam ajam aviyam. I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I'm covered by my creative potency, so the foolish do not know my transcendental nature, my supreme dominion over all that be. So Krishna is already there, but the question is, where are we? When we see the paintings or the deities, we may be thinking that these are just paintings. We may think that these are simply statues or whatever else we may be thinking. And they're looking at us thinking, my God, look at the state this poor soul is in. Jeev Jago, wake up. Therefore, one who's actually in spiritual consciousness, then one will see no difference between the deity and Krishna. Indeed, the Brahman who was on tour with the elderly Brahman and serving him, that after the elderly Brahmin had made his promise to the younger Brahmin to give his daughter in charity in marriage, and after that didn't turn out so well, before it didn't turn out so well, the younger Brahmin asked the deity, Gopal in this case, Gopal Krishna, to act as a witness, and had the Brahmin promise before the Gopal deity that he would give his daughter in marriage to the younger Brahmin. Later on, the younger Brahmin had to go to Vrindavan, and there he had asked Gopal to come and act as a witness that he had heard the elder Brahmin promise that he would give him his daughter, that is, the younger Brahmin would be given the daughter by the elder Brahmin. So the deity Gopal said, well, I could come as a four-handed Vishnu, in my four-handed Vishnu form, and act as a witness. So the Brahmin said, no, I mean, I said that you were the one who were the witness. That if you don't come, you'll become implicated. Because you're a witness and you're not performing your duty, you'll become implicated. So the deity said, Gopal said, but, you know, I'm a deity. I mean, how can I walk? And the Brahmin said, well, if you can talk, you can certainly walk. So Gopal thought about it and said, well, that's pretty good logic. I don't have too much to argue about that. So he agreed to come and walk along with the Brahmin. Now, of course, we can go to have someone make a promise before the Panchatattva and then call the Panchatattva as a witness. And for most of us, I doubt whether the Panchatattva is going to leave the altar and walk to whatever the designated witness stand is. So there's a quality, first of all, there's a quality of chanting, there's a quality of perception. The chanting of the holy name is the easiest process. It's not the only process, and the process has a purpose. As it says, Krite Tadarito Vishnu, Dwarpyam Tretiyam Yajito Mukai, Dwarpyam Paricharyam Kalota Dari Kirtana. That in the age of Satyayuga, people were so pure that they could directly meditate upon Krishna and his pastimes. Now, we can also meditate upon Krishna's pastimes, but try it. See how long our meditation will go on and how deep it's going to be. Therefore, it's not the recommended process in this age because we can hardly remember what Krishna looks like. But to speak of his associates, the land of Vrindavan, our minds are not so purified or expanded that we can even begin to imagine what this is like to meditate upon Krishna in trance. That's a very advanced stage of purification. But they were able to do that in Satya Yuga because they, first of all, just imagine if you were born in an environment there was no internet, there was no Facebook, there are no cars, there are no airplanes, there are no movies, there is no mundane school, abominable. There is nothing like that. That everyone there, the environment you were born into, the water was clean, the air was clean, the food was clean, everyone's consciousness was more or less clean. So you were starting out pretty good. Your parents, in order to had performed the Garbhadham Samskara perfectly, etc. So that didn't happen in this age. But as Satya Yuga went on and people became a little bit lusty, just a little bit lusty, and wanted to enjoy eating a little bit more than necessary, had an extra glubdhaman at the Sunday feast, then Treta Yuga began. Treta Yuga, it's not like the yugas just, you know, ding, it's Treta Yuga, and everything changes. No, everything becomes gradually degraded in a very subtle way. And this subtle way means that people became a little bit greedy for sense gratification. And therefore, Treta Yuga meant that yajna, one had to perform yajna. But what was the point of yajna? So that the Brahmins can make a living. They can chant all kinds of names and they get some dakshina at the end. Throw some ghee into the fire. So, any extra money? No, the whole idea was that if you offer to Vishnu the excess, your whatever excess goods you have, then you become detached enough so your mind will become purified and you could actually think about Krishna. Why can't we think about Krishna? Because we're thinking about other things. Because we're greedy. Because we're in anxiety about our lack of sense gratification or the threat of the lack of sense gratification or our lack of ability to obtain sense gratification. Maybe we'll lose something that's provided to us for sense gratification, or maybe we're hankering for something that will give us sense gratification. So, if we become purified from these things, then we can think about Krishna. Brahma, Bhuta, Prasanatma, Nishoshiti, Nakangshiti, Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu, Mad Bhaktim Lavate Param. Our impediment, we only have two impediments from becoming pure devotees. Very simple. It's simple. We don't have to worry about anything else except for two things. Unfortunately, these two things are the things we never worry about. Matter of fact, these two things, we're always worrying about the fact that we won't get them. Namely, hankering and lamentation. These are our only two problems in this world. And for most people, these are their only two activities. Hankering for what they don't have and lamenting over what they've lost. Even we have a pen and we lose it, we'll spend the whole day lamenting. If it was a good pen, of course. Therefore, the different ages are characterized by simply different degrees of hankering and lamentation. So by becoming purified, by offering something to Vishnu, then we give this up the idea that it's ours. And we give up the idea that it's ours, that it's Krishna's, then we can see Krishna everywhere. And when people became more lusty in Dwarpa Yuga, at least in this cycle of how the yugas are ordered, then people wouldn't perform sacrifice anymore. They were too attached. They didn't believe that by performing first of all, most people have no idea what the goal is, that the goal is Vishnu, to think about Krishna. The Tevidu Swarthikatim Hi Vishnu. If you tell people the goal of your life is to become Krishna conscious, most people think we're crazy. Most people think we're crazy anyhow. Even if we don't tell them anything, they've already reached that conclusion. But what to speak of that they should give up everything so they can think about Krishna? People will hardly give up anything. If you can convince them to give €5 for a book, you're doing quite well. So people won't perform, sacrifice their goods to become Krishna conscious. And even in Treta Yuga, people perform elaborate sacrifices, but if they didn't know that the goal is to become Krishna conscious, then they simply get some material goal. For instance, Privacitti? What was the name of that? He fell in the son of one of the Manu had different sons. One was Uttamapad, the other was Priyavrata, and he had a third one, Priyaschiti or something, in the ninth canto, who fell in love with Orvashi. And that was in Satyuga. And then at the end of Satyuga, because he had become quite lusty after Urvashi, then he saw a Treta Yuga's beginning, so he performed a sacrifice in order to go to the loka where Urvashi was. So his performance of sacrifice in Treta Yuga was simply to get a good wife. He didn't know that the reason performance of sacrifice was to become Krishna conscious. So we can perform sacrifice. As a matter of fact, we perform sacrifices, and most of our sacrifices are really, I don't know. First of all, people don't perform sacrifice, and if they do perform sacrifice in India, it's usually because the astrologer told them they'll counteract some problem they're going through in their life. Most people don't know that the aim of the sacrifice should be to become free from greed so that one can think about Krishna easily. So Dwarpa Yuga started and people were even more greedy. They wouldn't even sacrifice their possessions for Vishnu. And therefore temple worship was there. And some faith in the deity was there. If you give something to the deity, then the deity will help you out. Or the demigod will help you out. Some encouragement so that one would go to the temple and actually see Krishna. And therefore may become inspired to do something for Krishna. They weren't going to perform these elaborate sacrifices. And we can't imagine what it's like where they had invited the demigod, even the demigods came to these sacrifices. In Treta Yuga, the demigods didn't come to any kind of like social event. Something really must have been happening for the demigods to come. All the kings came, and the Brahmins were so qualified who were there, they could chant the mantras, and even if an animal was killed, either a cow or a horse, they could bring it back to life. They ignited the sacrifice simply by chanting a mantra. And they were so powerful in these sacrifices that even if they wanted to, they could actually kill Indra or any demigod. They could actually manipulate the entire universe. They were so qualified. So in Dwarapa Yuga, people lost, there were no Brahmins like that, practically speaking. And even if they were, people lost sight what the purpose of life is in general. And therefore, the deity worship was introduced. And people could spend their money on big temples if they were rich, or if they weren't rich, they could go to the temple. And they could begin to think about Krishna by seeing the deity and doing kirtan and having some plays, whatever. So their minds were filled with Krishna. They became inspired to sacrifice their lives for Krishna. And eventually, by doing that, they're able to think about Krishna in trance. Now we're in Kali Yuga, and the chant of the holy name is given to us. And we can see already, people have no idea what the chanting is all about. Therefore, they have these kirtans. Not only the devotees, but they have these big festivals filled with Mayavadis chanting the holy name. Of course, they'll also chant Shiva's name and Ganesha's name and everyone's name, but also Krishna's name. And sometimes we have gatherings, which is also good, the devotees chanting. But unless they know what they're chanting, then it simply becomes entertainment. Nice music, whatever. So that's auspicious, but not very auspicious. Not the ultimate auspiciousness. Unless people know that the chanting is part of a process, and if they really want to chant the holy name, they have to actually serve the deity in this age. Either the deity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and spread the Sankirtan movement, or at least preliminarily come to the temple and serve the deity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the temple and chant together with the devotees in the temple. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first, when he was at Shiva Sangha, had all the devotees privately chant the holy name. And when they became inspired and qualified, they went out into the public and chanted the holy name. And then, when one is performing sacrifice to the deity, either Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, or the deity in the temple, which happens to be here, also the Panchatattva, then one will be willing to sacrifice one's life in the service of Krishna. It is not it stops, we go in Harinam. No, we also have to develop the mentality, I'm going to sacrifice my whole life for Krishna. And as one develops that sacrifice, one's life, then one becomes qualified to actually chant the holy name in trance and actually experience Krishna and his associates in the spiritual world just by uttering the holy name, or actually uttering the holy name. So here at least, Indra is becoming falsely advised, or incorrectly advised, that you can just chant Hare Krishna, or you can perform a sacrifice, and everything's going to be all right. First of all, the people who are advising him are not in the right mentality. As I said, they probably didn't read the Bhagavatam. They read some other book about sacrifice or whatever else to get some material reward. But in the case of Ritrasura, he was not even just an ordinary demigod, Brahmin. He was a great devotee. And here it says that even if people don't like what you did, it's going to disturb your mind. Especially if the right people don't like what you did. Then you may start wondering if I did the right thing. And Krishna doesn't forget. And therefore Indra was bothered because the super soul didn't purify him. Didn't matter what kind of sacrifice he was going to make, because Krishna wasn't pleased, therefore he was suffering, Indra. So similarly, unless we do the right thing with Krishna's body, neither Krishna or his devotees are actually going to be pleased. It's not a question we can just chant, but chanting also means to act in Krishna's service. Iha yasya harer darshe karmana manasa gira nikilasya vavapsav su jiva mukta si uchate. That is a question of utilizing one's body, mind, and words completely in the service of Krishna. So unless our bodies are dedicated to doing what Krishna wants us to do, it's not a question of just doing anything and then afterwards saying, well, all right, I offer this to you, Krishna. No, it's a question of finding out first what Krishna wants us to do. Now, in the Varnashram system, people are trained from birth exactly what they're supposed to do. That's the two aspects of the Bhagavad Gita, the two main points. That Shreyan Swadamo Viguna Paradharma Sunustitat Shreyadharma Dinindam Shreyak Paradharma Bhayavaha. That it's better to perform one's own duty than to perform someone else's duty. Destruction, the cause of one's own duty, is better because to follow someone else's duty is dangerous. So from the beginning of one's life in the Varnashram system, one knows exactly what one's duties are. And one knows if I deviate from it, I'm going to get some reaction. Now we ourselves were born, the only duty we've ever been told is to make money to gratify our senses. That's the only advice people in Kali Yuga are given. Beg, borrow, and steal, but get some money. And then gratify your senses in any way you like. But this is not people's duty. This is not what they're supposed to be doing. So, one has to, but since we don't know what our duties are, because we don't even know what we are, here it mentions so many different sinful personalities, and we don't fit into any of those. They don't even mention us in the Bhagavatam. We may be critical, but he's a Shudra. Well, we're not even qualified to be, we weren't even born from Shudras. We're born from people less than Shudras. They don't even have a description for them in the Bhagavatam. Therefore, what is our duty? Generally, we take our duties, we simply read the Bhagavatam, we start lamenting. We take that as our duty. Oh my God. So critical. I don't like this book at all. We like to hear, oh, my dear devotees, you're all pure devotees. You're all going back to Godhead. You're all great magnanimous. And then when we hear the truth, well, my God, who is this person to criticize me? So the Bhagavatam doesn't really criticize us because we don't even fit into a category worthy of criticism. Therefore, our only duty is to follow the instructions. Swadharma is to follow the instructions of the acharyas in disciple succession. Any initiating spiritual master, that's their duty, is to give the information what the acharyas in disciple succession want us to do in Krishna's service, which means ultimately what Krishna wants us to do. So that's our first duty at every moment, to ascertain what Krishna wants us to do to please him. Now it's true, Krishna wants us to come to the temple and chant Hare Krishna because he wants us to do it in a certain way also. And we won't be able to do it unless we spend our whole lives dedicated to Krishna's service. We just can't come to the temple and try to chant Hare Krishna and become successful, to the highest degree at least. We'll make some progress, but that progress will only be as steady as when we go outside the temple, we continue to chant Hare Krishna and continue to serve the desires of Krishna. Otherwise, it's just like lighting a fire and pouring water on it. Now, if we try and light the fire throughout the day and we don't pour so much water, then we'll become encouraged to keep on trying to light the fire. And then we may find out, maybe I should stop throwing water on the fire. It's not helping my lighting the fire. So that's why Padyatra is so nice, because those who go on Padyatra, they have a chance to spend most of the time trying to light the fire and less time trying to pour water on it. So that gives one a higher taste. And that higher taste will eventually inspire one to spend more time lighting fires than pouring water on them. So Indra, yes, he's going to pour a big bunch of water on his fire, and the Brahmin's not going to be able to light it so easily. So he's going to have to work it out, and it's going to take him a lot longer than he imagined. So similarly, we want to chant the holy name, and we want to chant the holy name in a way that we're actually going to get darshan of Krishna. Not just see Krishna, but actually feel the unlimited ocean of bliss that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes in his Shikshastika prayers. Unlimited ocean of bliss and love, and that's going to take a whole life of dedication. Not just chanting once in a while, not just hearing once in a while, not even just remembering Krishna in ecstasy once in a while. It takes a whole life of dedication to come to that, being in the fire all the time and no more water being thrown onto it. That's called anartha vritti. And from there, one actually goes on towards the higher experiences in Krishna consciousness until one actually obtains bhava. And at the stage of bhava, then we actually understand something about what Krishna consciousness is actually all about. Now we have a theory and we have a little experience, but only at the stage of bhava is it actually realized fully, to an extent, because bhava is only one ray in the sunlight of prema. So we could say prema, then we really have a clear idea. Anyhow, we have a lot to look forward to. If we stick to the process, we'll gradually become more and more amazed at what actually did we get ourselves into. And if we take to the process a little bit and we keep on wondering, why don't I get everything immediately, it's because we're not very serious about the process. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you for the lecture. Part of our process is like gathering so-called realizations. What is the value of our realizations before Nishtha? And I mean, is this part of the process, or how
yeah,
would you define it?
That is the process. Unless we get realizations. But what kind of realizations? I got one letter from someone who used to be a candidate. He wrote me that, and he said that, you know, in his argument for becoming a sannyas candidate again, one of his qualifications, he said, well, before I joined the movement, then Vishnu appeared before me. And then when I joined the movement, Radha and Krishna came in my dreams a couple of times. So this kind of realization is not very valuable. Now, realization, I had to become more steady and enthusiastic in devotional service. Well, that's very good realizations. And by such realizations, we will become gradually more steady and enthusiastic. Other kind of realizations that I'm God, or that God will come before me dancing, or I got the trick, I know exactly how to sell books on book distribution, I got the technique down. No, the real realizations are things like, I'm actually an insignificant living entity, an insignificant particle of dust at the lotus feet of Krishna. Such realizations actually have some value. And they'll bring us to the highest platform. So we have to know what is actually a realization. People are realizing things all the time. But we should know what's the realizations in Krishna consciousness that will help us progress towards our perfection in Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
So the holy name is very powerful. So then, if my vadi, they chant the holy name, then why they don't become a devotees?
Because Krishna is sending them to hell, according to the Harinam Chintamani. If you chant offensively, then instead of actually cultivating, or in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says it also, instead of actually watering the creeper of devotional service, you actually water the weeds. Because they're not chanting the holy name. It's not so easy to chant the holy name. Prabhupada gives the example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of one man, his wife was one butcher. His wife was named Radha. So every time he chanted the name of Radha, he would always think of his lusty affairs with his wife. So that's not Radha, Srimati Radharani. That's something else. So we actually have to know who Krishna is, who Hare is, and we have to chant to them. If we don't know who Hare is, we don't know who Krishna is, then we're not chanting to them. We're not calling them, we're calling something else. Or just to give that story again, that man who had, that lady who had a goat, her name was Radha. You know that story? So Radha was a beautiful little goat. And she died one day. So this lady became very distraught. And she decided the only relief I can get was to go to this Bhagavat Saptaha that one man was giving. So she sat in the Bhagavat Saptaha, and through 7 days she looked at this man, and he had a beard exactly like her goat, Radha's beard. So every time she saw this man, she began to cry, who was reciting the Bhagavatam. And every time she heard the name of Radha when he recited it, because he only was reciting from the certain parts of the 10th canto, then she began to cry, remembering her goat. So at the end of the Bhagavad Saptaha, the man paid full dandavas before this lady and said, "Oh, great lady, we can see you're a very advanced devotee, full of ecstasy and Krishna consciousness. Please give me your blessings. You know, what is your secret of such emotional ecstasy?" So she said, "Well, actually, every time I had a goat, her name was Radha, and she recently died. And every time I looked at you, I remembered, because you have exactly the same kind of beard that she had, I remembered my dead goat and began to cry. And whenever you said the name of Radha, then immediately I remembered my dead goat and I became filled with emotions and began to cry. So that's the secret of my emotional ecstasy." So that's the Mayavadis. They're not remembering Krishna. They're remembering things less than a dead goat.
Hare Krishna. It's about chanting mantras and holy name from Mayavadis and impersonalists. Isn't better that they chant Krishna's names, even if they don't know nothing about him, or not chanting at all about him? It's, of course, they are not offensive. Isn't that somehow they are connected with the name, and sooner or later they will bring them, the holy name will bring them to Krishna?
No. Well, first of all, we can't mix the Mayavadis and the impersonalists exactly in this respect together, because Shukadeva Goswami was an impersonalist, but he became free by the association of Krishna and his father, Vyasadeva. But Mayavadis mean that they have this conception that Krishna is Maya. So when they're chanting holy name, their idea is that they're going to become Krishna. So there's offensive. So there's offensive chanting. They don't get love of God. They get the result of chanting offensively, which is they become degraded. Therefore, it's advised that milk touched by the lips of a serpent has poisonous effects. They don't hear from the Mayavadis, because instead of becoming elevated, you'll become degraded.
So they are aware about Krishna as a person, but they consider that
they're envious. How can they be aware of Krishna as a person? They're envious of just the idea that Krishna could be a person. They don't believe that Krishna. Of course, they know, according to the Ashri Sankaracharya, Narayana Parovyakdat, according to his philosophy, Narayana is above the material energy. But they think Narayana is a product of illusion. So yes, Narayan created the material world, which is also illusion. So the bigger illusion created the smaller illusion. But after all, he's an illusion. So we don't give them much credit, really, for saying Narayan is above the material energy, because they think Narayan is illusory. So chanting the name of Narayan, chanting to illusion, thinking it's illusion, you don't get very much credit from doing it. Matter of fact, you become simply more illusioned. You'll never be able to understand Krishna. So just this idea of thinking that Narayan is illusion is the greatest offense.
So the key word is offensive.
Yeah, it's the greatest offense because they'll perpetually remain an illusion. They'll never be able to get out of it. Never will they wind up as a dog or a hog somewhere eventually, because if eventually they'll perform sinful activities and they'll stay in the cycle of birth and death forever, practically speaking. All right, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.
Arriba.